Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. Congratulations to our winner of the Liberty Mutual Music City kickoff game tickets, Ole Miss versus Louisville, Nissan Stadium, Sunday, September 6th. The trivia question. This is the second time these two programs will meet. The first time happened in Atlanta in 2021. What was the score of the game? The score was Ole Miss 43, Louisville 24 in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game. Matt Corral, 381 passing yards, 55 rushing yards. Remember Matt Corral, everybody?
Stud.
I was just going to Google him and see where the heck he is right now. Is he playing
is he
in
the NFL?
He flamed out of the league.
Okay.
Where are they now?
That was sad. You know, he played in the bowl game, which I always commend. That one year, and he got hurt in the bowl game. I don't know if he would have made it or not, but that was not good. That probably didn't encourage others to participate in the bowl games. We long for the days where a bowl game is
legit,
best on best, right?
If you missed your chance to win those tickets, sorry, Derek. If you missed your chance to win those tickets, we are giving them away throughout the rest of the week. So we've got a pair tomorrow, a pair Thursday, and a pair Friday. So if you want those tickets, be listening. You have three more chances to win those tickets to see Ole Miss versus Louisville at Nissan Stadium on Sunday, September 6th. Speaking of college football, of course, the big news yesterday, if you want to call it big, the Associated Press released its top 25. Ohio State, number one. Oregon, number two. Georgia, three. Notre Dame, four. Texas, five. Derek Mason will remind you that the last time the Big Ten had the numbers one and two teams in the preseason was 1961. Also, zero SEC teams received a first-place vote from the esteemed panel. Sorry, Willie and Connor.
It's okay.
Depth, Adam, depth.
Oh, here we go again.
Look, the line has been drawn in the sand. Willie and Connor, SEC through and through. Derek, Big Ten through and through. Me, I'm an ACC guy. I'm siding with Derek Mason because I don't like all of the SEC whining and complaining. Oh, the depth! The depth!
Perfectly
okay.
Legit. I don't know why you say it like
it's
that.
Not legit. It's never, because it's never been an argument, so it's not legit.
I'm inventing.
No, you can't.
I think there's a little bit more testosterone in our voices than what you just did.
No, it sounded a lot like whining. And that wasn't the two of you specifically. That's just what I hear from any SEC fan.
That's how it comes out.
The depth! Yeah.
The depth! The depth! Like, the plane. No, shut up. Stop, people.
Our worst teams are better than your worst teams.
Now we're arguing over who got the worst teams.
I will ask this question.
Okay, come on.
If, just philosophically, forget about college football or any sport.
Okay.
If you have a better record than me, does that mean you're better than me?
No, I mean.
Not always.
Not always.
Not necessarily, right?
No.
The strength of schedule would play into that. So when you do a preseason AP Top 25, I believe that almost all voters are not voting based on who they think the best 25 are. They're doing what everybody does. They look at the schedule and they say, well, what's going to make the difference in slotting who I'm going to vote for number one as opposed to, say, number five? I think the easier schedule gets the nod. And that's why I think there are a lot of SEC teams in the top 25, but none of them got a first-place vote because nobody believes that anybody is that much better than the rest of the pack to run the table in the SEC. I was listening to a podcast out of The Athletic, and they were talking about that. They don't think anybody – who was it? Was it Bruce Feldman that had his SEC preview, and he had the two winningest teams in the SEC going 10-2. In other words, nobody will run the table in that league because of the balance and the depth. The depth, as you say.
Oh, the depth.
I'm saying it with authority. Yes, the depth. Like, that's a good thing.
It's never been a thing, but we have so to now it can't our, be a good
right,
thing.
But Mississippi we have to State's better than Northwestern. Oh.
Like, who cares?
Yes, like, but we have to factor that in. When you're looking at a team's record, and I think this is going to play out, we're setting the table now because I'm just telling everybody right now that's listening, when we get to November and December and the committee is starting to vote and they do their, I don't even want to say it, it's a bad word, their bumbled process, they need to rethink how they do it because it's not wins and losses. They need to look at the whole thing. And that was it was very flawed and complained about last year, and it's going to be even worse this year with the SEC playing 9 conference games and a 10th game against the Power Four.
Okay, I get all that. You remember in the first – you remember –
Derek's like, yeah, you say this
You remember
day.
The first fight between Mr. T and Sylvester Stallone? You remember
Rocky
the first
III.
Fight? Yeah, the first, the actual first fight.
Oh, yeah, it didn't go well for Rocky.
Yeah. And Mr. T said, you've been playing all those bums.
Yes.
Come play me. Yes. You've been fighting all those bums. Come fight me.
Yes.
What happened?
Clubber beat him. Rocky got complacent.
That's absolutely. Not a bad Mr. T impression, by the way.
Oh, it was great.
Was it?
That was good. Right. It was good.
See, so what y'all saying is, because in the second time, it's like, and then the second time, what happens?
Rocky turns to Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
He rediscovers himself, and he beats Clubber.
Absolutely. So, essentially what I'm saying is, y'all are the ones that, for many years, y'all were Mr. T. The SEC with Mr. T. Y'all playing those bums. Come play us. Y'all playing those bums. Okay. But then what happened as of lately, which is the second, Rocky. Well, the fourth Rocky. What's the third Rocky?
Third.
Because they fought twice. Then we became Rocky. And now all of a sudden, now y'all are talking about everything else except what happened in the actual match.
Also,
what happened in the actual match?
Also, if you want to trigger Willie Donick, and it's hard to do that because Willie is an even-keeled person. If you want to trigger Willie Donick, just whisper two words in his ear, Notre Dame.
Nobody wants to hear about Notre Dame.
Right. I think we can unite.
Yeah,
and
I think
agree
everybody
Notre
unites.
Dame has got the yes. easiest schedule of anybody, yeah. which is why they got a lot of first place votes.
But along those lines, I saw a really
and they're good.
I saw a really interesting statistic, courtesy of ESPN, after the AP poll was released the other day. In the college football playoff era, so since 2014, only one team, Indiana, last year, which opened at number 20, has opened the season ranked outside the top 6 in one. The national championship. Again, in the CFP era since 2014, only one team, Indiana, opened the season, ranked outside the top 6, and won the national championship. So, those 6 teams this year, Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas, and the aforementioned Indiana. Two-part question. One, do you think that that's going to be the norm moving forward, that being in the top 6 won't really mean anything in the long run? And two, is there a team ranked outside the top 6 that you would be willing to put some shekels on to win the national championship?
I believe that the NIL era is still evolving. Mm-hmm. I think we're still seeing it sort itself out. And I'm wondering about things like, are teams going to be better and smarter at how to spend their money? And what effect will that have? But in the meantime, what we've seen is there's a lot less difference between the haves and the have-nots than ever before. I think there's more teams that are capable of knocking off somebody big time along the course. I feel like that's the trend right now anyway.
Yeah, I mean, but all of this boils down to, who can stay healthiest the longest? Who can be healthy toward the end of the season? And whether you're playing – in the SEC or the Big Ten, it's physical football across the board. So, if Ohio State comes into the college football playoffs and they're beat up, I don't care how good they've been, it's going to be hard for them to win. Same with Texas. If Texas get in the college football playoff, but they're beat up, I don't care how much talent they have. When they play someone that has equal or better, slightly better talent, they may lose. Why? Because they're beat up. A lot of and the Big Ten just seems to be a team, at least the team that have won, they've been the more physical and the more healthier team headed into those championship games that they won. So, I mean, listen, the SEC can complain about their depth all they want to. The fact remains is, for many years, the SEC was dominant. Why? Because they had championships, they had players in the NFL, and they were running a gamut across the board. But now the tide has switched, turned, and some of it, I would tend to say a lot of it has to do with NIL and kids being able to move freely. But the tide has turned, and now it's no longer just a, you know, SEC world and everybody's living in it. It's become a more of a Big Ten world, and now the SEC is freaking out like, oh, no, but we got the best conference from top to bottom. But that's what we're talking about now.
I don't think you guys, as much of a Big Ten supporter as you are, like I cannot – I'm not saying anything bad about – well, let's take Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Neutral territory, right? Not Big Ten or SEC. Notre Dame is legitimately a really, really good team. Mm-hmm. But unless SMU or North Carolina or Stanford or some, you know, one or two of the teams that are on that schedule that right now do not look like good teams, Notre Dame is going to be sitting there. They should not lose more than one game. They're like, if you look at the Vegas thing, their over-under is like 11.5 because their schedule is that easy. But at the same time, we all look at Notre Dame's roster and we're like, that's a legit team that can win playoff games. We agree with that, right?
Yeah.
They're good. But their schedule is not going to penalize them very much. So I think when we're – to make the point, mm-hmm. I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana. Those teams are legit. They could mm-hmm. they could beat any SEC team. We saw it happen. Indiana wiped the floor with all those teams last year. So they're legit powers. All I'm pointing out is their pathway is perfect. Those Big Ten teams, they play just enough good teams in their league that they'll be tested, and somebody on the committee could say, well, they played so-and-so and they beat so-and-so, but they also mixed in there. It's perfect. They mix in 5 or 6 games that they know they can name the score on. And my point is only that the SEC doesn't have that. The SEC has got dogfights every week. Even the weakest opponent in the SEC, especially if they're playing at home, can bring something to the table and knock somebody off. Florida was a bad team last year. They beat mm-hmm. Texas. They cost Texas a chance to win a national title. They didn't get to go to the playoffs because of that.
But if you're looking at the SEC, the two teams that everybody are talking about is Texas and Georgia.
Yes.
And then it seems like there's a notch below that. Not to say that those teams aren't good, but that Georgia and Texas are, you know, the two kings of the conference right about now. If you look at their schedule, I mean, nobody's talking about, you know, it's going to be a dogfight with those top-tier teams. But we know that Texas and Georgia ain't walking in there playing dogfights every week. We see the games. They're blowouts. A lot of them are blowouts. And maybe they score some points at the end of the game. But when we're actually looking at the games, there hasn't been too many teams that I looked at playing in the SEC, playing Georgia or Texas, and I thought, man, that team really is better than Texas or Georgia. No! And we see it in the score. The scores plays them out, especially with the lower half of the SEC. So we're making it seem like every game is 14-13. Every game 21-20. No, it's not. We've seen a lot of blowouts in the SEC.
615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich will join the program coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the preseason AP poll. Who's underrated? Who's overrated? He'll tell us coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
Okay, I think I got the theme here,
D-Mace. Vin Gidendonic, 1025, the game. All right, Willie, take a stab at
My stab at this is duets.
I guess ding, so. Ding, yeah, ding, you ding, didn't ding, tell ding. Me.
Yeah, I forgot to tell. I forgot to tell Connor. You are absolutely right. Duets.
We got some duets. First one was Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. Then it was Alicia Keys and Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And now we've got Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers. Does it get any more Nashville than that? Come on.
This has been in my back pocket for weeks.
Has it?
Yes. And I saw it today, and I was like, I think I know it. And that's where I didn't guess because I had an unfair advantage. I know all the songs. But good job, D-Maze.
I'm already excited for my theme tomorrow. It's already planned out, just saying.
Is that why you polled for our social security numbers yesterday?
No, I've decided to change it up. Mm. I've decided to change it up. But let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich. Hello, Trevor. How are you?
I am good. How about Rihanna and Eminem, I Love the Way You Lie?
Oh,
I like that one.
Might be coming up around the corner.
Yeah, it may be in there.
Use it for your wedding song, but boy, it's intense.
Indeed, it is. So, Trevor, we were just talking about the preseason AP poll, and ESPN put out an interesting stat following the release of the AP poll. The stat read, quote, in the CFP era, only one team, that being Indiana, has opened the season ranked outside the top six and won the national championship. So, Trevor, I don't know if you're a betting man. I'm certainly not. But I am asking you to stake your home on a team outside the preseason top six to win the national championship. Which team are you selecting and why?
Well, I wouldn't stake my home. I would stake one of Derek's homes, though.
Fair enough.
Still got plenty of homes to pick from, you know, especially the ones on his islands. So we'll go from there. You know, you talked about outside the top six, and Adam, I don't know if this is cheating, but I think I'd start with Miami. They're at number seven, and I think people are looking at, first of all, their quarterback, Carson Beck, is gone. They're offensive line only gets one starter back. They lost their two edge rushers, Akeem Mesidor and Reuben Baines, in the first round of the NFL draft. And I think they're ranked at number seven because people wonder if they can get back to the top level having to replace so much. But I think they can. I think on defense, they brought in a terrific edge rusher through the portal from Missouri to bolster that side of it. They've got some absolute inside on that defensive line. They're very active on the back seven. Their running back room and receivers will be explosive. The offensive line is built to replace, to have guys step up. And when you watch them practice, the offensive line of Miami practices technique as well as anybody I've seen in college football. I think what it really comes down to is the quarterback situation. I mean, Carson Beck last year was quite good, and that was enough to get Miami to the national championship game and be competitive in that game with Indiana. But I think Darian Mensah, the transfer from Duke, is more explosive. Last year, Mensah threw like 34 touchdowns and just six interceptions. Beck threw six interceptions combined in Miami's two regular season losses last year. So you've got a guy that protects the ball and drives it down the field, over 4,000 yards passing last year. And he brought with him from Duke, the ACC champions last year, his best receiver. And you combine that with Malachi Toney, a receiver. I think that Miami is a little bit too low at number seven. And I think they've got the ability, especially the way their schedule shakes out, to make the playoff and to make a lot of noise when they get there. And I think that outside of the top six, there's a couple of teams that I like, but I like Miami the best.
This Blue Devils fan, not at all bitter about Darian Mensah. Not bitter at all. All right, Trevor, down at number 20 in the AP poll, the Tennessee Volunteers and your colleague Heather Dinich went on the Pat McAfee show yesterday and said she couldn't even believe that Tennessee is ranked. She thought it was preposterous that Tennessee was ranked even at number 20. Do you agree?
No, I don't think it's preposterous at all. If Tennessee can get the quarterback situation squared away, I think their offense could be as solid as they've had in several years. You know, I think they're strong at receiver. They've got a tremendous running back group coming back. The offensive line should be one of the best in the SEC. I think they'll be able to move the ball and play keep away from opposing offenses. And that'll be important because their big question is on the defensive side of the ball. They've got to replace an awful lot of people. But it really comes down to Deshaun Bishop, I think, at running back in that offensive line. From a quarterback standpoint, I'm not sure which guy's going to start. Neither guy has much experience, or if any experience, playing college football. But George McIntyre from this area has a big arm. Faison Brandon is an explosive playmaker. He's a five-star recruit, true freshman. And so as long as that quarterback situation gets squared away, I think Tennessee ought to be ranked about where they are, because I like the way the rest of their offense settles in, and their defense isn't going to be awful, but I think the offense will complement it with the running game.
Trevor, do you when you're looking at the top five, we're talking with Trevor Maddox, ESPN and NFL analyst for both college and NFL, actually. Absolutely. When you're looking at the top five, which one of these teams do you look at and says they have a true possibility of falling outside sort of that 12-man college football bracket? Or is there any team within the top five that you think would
think
have
all
a possibility?
Five are really good. The thing that worries me, and this is going to be anathema to a lot of people, is Georgia. Keep in mind that the last 3 years, no SEC team, including Georgia, has played in the national championship game. And Georgia has been the one winning the SEC. They're the class of the SEC. So why haven't they been able to even get to the national championship game? It's because Georgia is very good at bullying people. They're strong on the offensive line. They will be again this year. They really especially will be next year, because they've got so many freshmen and sophomores that are redshirt freshmen and sophomores that are going to be competing for starting jobs this year on the line. The defense will be strong. The running game will be great. And because of that, they can bully most teams that they play. The problem with Georgia in the last several years has been against the elite defenses when they're not running the ball that well. They haven't been able to enforce their will in the downfield passing game. And so the book on them was, come on up and gum up the short passes, come up and stop the run, and force them to prove that they can consistently burn you over the top. And so that is where the SEC in general, and Georgia in particular, need to improve in order to get to where they want to go. And really at Georgia, they lost a bunch of receivers to the NFL in the portal off of last year's team, and they weren't that explosive anyhow. And so, once again, they've got young receivers and a few portal additions that will have to develop chemistry and explosiveness if Georgia's going to do anything other than bully the teams that they can bully and then be limited against the elite teams. And so that's kind of where I see the SEC right now, certainly at the top.
Now, let's transition over to the NFL. What are some things you liked about what you saw this past Thursday with the Titans, and some of the things you are still concerned with?
Yeah, that's a good question, Derek, because, you know, we all overread, right? We all overreact to what we see in the first preseason game. But there are some things that I thought were really encouraging, and a couple things that kind of I didn't think that they would be awful at in a preseason game. One thing that was encouraging was early on the defense in the first half. They did a great job of getting behind the line and stopping the run before it got started. And they did a great job of limiting big plays. San Francisco completed a lot of passes, but certainly in that first half when, you know, more of the first and second team were playing for the Titans defense, there'd be a completed pass and they'd be tackled immediately. And that's kind of the way the defense is set up, to keep big plays by the opposing offense limited, make them run a lot of plays to get down into scoring position. And really in the opening drive of the game, you saw that happen. San Francisco was grinding out a long drive, and then as they got closer to scoring position, they ended up petering out, made a couple of mistakes, and ended up having to punt. I think it was a punt. And I thought the defense did a good job at that. I think they needed to do a better job of getting pressure on the quarterback with the front four. there were some guys that did some pretty good things. I thought Keldrick Falk, the first-round draft choice defensive end out of, or defensive lineman out of Auburn, was getting behind the line consistently on pass and run and causing all kinds of trouble. But there were too many opportunities to throw with time for the San Francisco quarterbacks in that first half. I didn't like that. On the offensive side, I really liked the running game. And you look at, you know, the biggest question on the offensive line, really the offense, is right guard, where rookie draft choice Fernando Carmona started. And I was really impressed with him in what he did, not because he was a pile driver and pancaking people 4 yards down the field, but because he played really well in combination with the center on his left and the right tackle on his right. I mean, in that first touchdown drive, you saw that happen well, where he had a good combination block on a run with J.C. Latham, the right tackle, and then he had a good combination block with the center, Austin Schlotman, on the touchdown run, the five-yard touchdown run. And then in between those, he had a nice combination pickup of a stunt, a twist on a pass play with J.C. Latham. And, you know, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be the Incredible Hulk in there in order to win that job and perform at a high enough level. You need to perform well in combination with the guy on your left and the guy on your right, and he did a really good job of that. The thing that I wasn't real happy about, Derek, was the timing between the quarterback and the receivers. I think there's a lot of people that are really down on Cam Ward, and I'm not as down on him and his performance in that game as maybe some other people might be. But I think the third drive, the last drive that he was in there, was a really good example that he had opportunities to complete passes to guys that weren't wide open, but certainly were there for the completion. And he missed. Now, whether he missed or the receiver was slightly in the wrong spot, I'm not sure which one of those things it was all the time. But I do know on the last play, for example, it was 3rd and 10, and he was trying to throw to Carnell Tate on an in route on the right. Well, Carnell Tate kind of got hung up with the zone defender as he was making his cut. Then he cleared from that, and Tate then cut inside into some open space. The problem is that Cam Ward held the ball a little bit too long, and Tate, in the open space between the zone, didn't sit down and stay in the open space. Tate continued to run inside to where there was a safety waiting. And so Cam held the ball too long, and Tate didn't sit down in the zone. He ran into the next defender, and that next defender inside almost intercepted the pass. So when you look at things like that, it's timing stuff, it's rhythm stuff, and if it keeps happening in the preseason, I'll be upset. But in the first preseason game, while I don't think it should have happened as often as it did, I'm okay with it because of the fact that this is getting out there, getting your feet wet, and learning where you have to improve. I just don't want to see the same mistakes repeated.
Trevor Maddux is with us. Trevor, we got into a really interesting discussion yesterday with Blake Bedingfield, a former scout who is now covering the Titans. And he was talking about he thinks the best path for Cam Ward would be to have the mentality a little bit more of a game manager, a little more Brock Purdy, a little less Patrick Mahomes, a little less creativity, and more of the straight stuff. Do you think that is the right? Because sometimes when you throw out game manager, it seems to have a negative connotation. And if I was a quarterback and somebody said, I want you to be a game manager, I might take that as a little bit of an insult. But do you think, can you see the wisdom there?
I can see the wisdom there. Who are the greatest quarterbacks of this and the previous generation? Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. Now you look at Patrick Mahomes, who, by the way, is much more of a game manager than people think of, because it's the crazy stuff that he does off schedule that makes the highlight reel. But in between that, he's running on schedule, on time, a lot. And the irony is that if you are on schedule, you are on time, you are taking what the defense gives you, then it opens up opportunities for big plays down the road because you're breaking down the defense. Whereas if you just try to be Superman the entire time, once in a while you'll do something that'll make the highlights for you, but you'll also do stuff that'll make the highlights for the other side. And Cam Ward, frankly, is not Patrick Mahomes in his ability to run around. He is not Lamar Jackson. Sorry, he's athletic, but he's not those guys, right? He's not even Jackson Dart of the Giants. He's Cam Ward. He's mobile enough. But if he tries to go out there and play like those other guys, he's going to end up being his own worst enemy. Now, take a look at Caleb Williams. First pick in the draft, Chicago Bears a couple of years ago, came out and tried to do with the Bears his rookie year what made him great in college, which is to say he ran around and tried to make plays, playing sandlot ball. And guess what? He was awful. The Bears were awful. Well, what happened last year? He gets a new coach, Ben Johnson, and Johnson convinced him to do what Patrick Mahomes did, which is to say, focus first on being that game manager. Focus first on checking it down on first and 10 for a four-yard gain, because that puts you in position to run play action pass and have a big play down the field, right? And Caleb Williams was humble enough to limit what he thought made him great in college and do what the coach said, which is say, be a game manager first. And what that did for Williams was allowed him to then excel as a playmaker when the opportunities came to him, and the Bears won the division last year. And that's exactly what Cam Ward needs to do. If he's upset about the idea of being a game manager, then he's not going to play in this league. If he embraces it, then he will also be able to showcase his playmaking skills.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace. Vin Gidendonick, he joins us every Tuesday at 4:20. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction coming up next. Plus, one texter has a thought for Derek Mason about his Big Ten SEC thoughts from earlier in the hour, and we will get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We talked a little bit about it with Trevor Maddich, the Cam Ward game manager conversation that stems from Blake Bedingfield's analysis of the first preseason game at PaulKaharsky.com. We had Blake Bedingfield on the program yesterday. We will revisit that conversation at the top of the hour. But Derek Mason, one texter has a bone to pick with about your Big Ten SEC take.
Bring your bones.
2025, average margin of victory in conference play. SEC, 10.41. Big Ten, 16.28. Big 12, 16.13. Median margin, SEC, 8 points. Big Ten, 14 points. Widest of any Power Four. One of these is not like the others. So please ask Derek to back up his meritless blowout anecdotes with some data after the break. 2025 SEC conference play had the lowest average margin of victory of any conference since 2000. Most competitive conference in 25 years. I'm fine with saying the Big Ten has the best teams right now, but let's not make baseless arguments about Georgia and Texas winning by three touchdowns every week.
Well, I went back and I checked the numbers, and I was specifically talking about the top teams. It's not like, and I checked the scores. It's not like they're going in there and they're winning by 6 points or 3 points. They're beating teams like 10, 14 points. Yeah, there are going to be some tough ones, just like the Big Ten. There's going to be some tough games in there, especially as the season gets going. But we are acting as if, and again, I can pull up the scores. We are acting as if every game is a, and if you want to call a close game a 45 to 41 close game, I just say that's two teams without a lick of defense that day. So, and we see a lot of those across college football as well as the Big Ten, where it's high scoring games. And now you want to classify that as a tough game. Tough in what sense? Both teams score 40 some points. Ain't nothing tough about that. So again, they're not walking in here and it's this old school grind it out, you know, 13-14 game, a 12-10 game. Those games don't exist.
But this, you got to get some. The math is the math.
If you just, I never argued.
It's proof.
I never argued
I
the
like
depth.
This guy.
I never argued the depth, but that has never been an argument to argue. But now all of a sudden, it wants to be an argument.
Well, everybody can pick out a couple of games that were blowouts here and a couple of close
exactly.
games.
Exactly. So
but
we
the point
kinda,
is, they were more close games in the SEC
but
than
the Big
Ten.
The argument was never. I can see if I walked in here, and this is for the texter too. I can see if I walked in, and my first claim was the Big Ten has the deepest and best conference out there. And then what the texter said, what you were saying, you're absolutely correct. But that is not where I started from. That's where y'all want to end, but that's not where I started from because that's not where the SEC started and ended from when they were making the same claims. So now that the shoe is on the other foot, now all of a sudden it's, oh, well, no, we're going to start talking about this. Well, you can't change the rules midstream. You ain't even got the ball no more. So stop it. You don't have the ball no more, so you can't make the rules. He who has the ball make the rules. And right now, the Big Ten has the ball. I don't care how deep your conference is, damn it. The Big Ten is reigning supreme right now. So we got the ball. Come and take it. I drew a line in the sand. Come and take it, SEC.
It's a perfect layout to win a championship in the league because the top teams are really good and the bottom teams are terrible. So you get
terrible.
Horrible. So you get some easy, you get more of an easy ride in the middle of the league.
Oh my goodness.
Week in, week out,
it's tough. All games are tough when you're playing in conferences, especially at the end of the year. Now, you may have a team that, you know, year by year or something like that where they just dominate. I didn't hear none of this when Alabama was just mopping up teams from the SEC, the ACC, the BCC, the DWA, whatever it was. Alabama was mopping them up. But there was nobody was screaming about that. And we're talking about teams within the conference. But now all of a sudden, that's my only gripe. It's like now all of a sudden that means something when it never did mean anything. It's about champ. Why do you think you argue LaMichael and LeBron and everybody picks Michael just because? Why? The championships, man. That's what we're talking about, championships. We're not talking about how deep. Nobody cares how many, you know, games the Lakers. Did they win a championship? No. All right, move on. Who won the championship?
That same texter said, ha, 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 I love it. He is right. We got to earn it back. All right, Derek Mason.
Exactly. That's all I'm saying.
You might have swayed somebody.
I'm just going to give you another in a series of examples that I like to use. And this is, I think the committee has to look at these things when they evaluate a team's game-by-game schedule. But Arkansas was probably the worst team in the league last year, right? Georgia's SEC opener is at Arkansas. Now, they should beat Arkansas.
That should be a cakewalk.
It should be. They're going to be favored by double digits easy, maybe 14, maybe more than that. I don't know exactly. But I can tell you this. At Arkansas, they're going to have 80,000 people. That is going to be an outstanding college football atmosphere. It is not going to be a game where you just... Now, when Ohio State goes to Purdue... It's just not going to be the same. Or
Purdue
goes to Maryland.
Purdue filled their team up. Purdue filled their stadium up.
Purdue has good fans.
Yes.
But
why
Purdue
do you always bring Rutgers
down.
In this, man?
They're in your league. They're in your league. When you go to Rutgers, and I hope Jason McCourty's not listening, but if when you go to Rutgers or you go to Maryland, it's just not the same atmosphere. It's
Rutgers.
Not as tough.
Okay. You had me with
Rutgers
in Maryland, okay? You had me
and
with
Purdue.
That.
Purdue was terrible.
No, don't.
And they got the athletic director that botched the pregame the press.
Yeah,
conference.
Yeah, you're right about that. He ain't making the Big Ten look good either. but listen,
Tommy McClellan.
Yeah, but again, if the argument has always been the depth of the the conferences. If that had always been argued, but then for sure, the SEC from top to bottom, it's a stronger conference, and the numbers bear it. But when you're talking about that upper echelon of teams, three or four teams, the Big Ten has reigned supreme. Why? Because they brought championships home. And when SEC starts doing that, then you can sort of make the rules on how you're going to, compare, both conferences when it comes to. First, y'all got to get in the championship game again, first and foremost, before y'all do anything. You know, you got to get in a championship game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so you can't win a championship without getting to the championship game.
They just beat each other up. It's cannibalism.
See, there we go. There we go. It's cannibalism.
It's a longer road.
It's a longer road. Both of our roads the same. Listen, that's your – okay, that is your fault.
I will tell you, internally,
SEC, that's your fault.
If it is. Yeah. And internally in the league, I would be talking about that with the commissioner more. Like, hey, we need to rethink this. 10th game's got to be against the
power. Well, just do like basketball. Just have some crossover games. You know, if y'all want to settle who has the worst bottom half, let's just match those teams up during the year. The bottom half of the Big Ten and SEC, one game. Let's just match. That's what college basketball does at the beginning of the season. They play teams. The ACC does it all the time. Big Ten does it. SEC does it. So, and then you can get a better, you can gauge your team better because you've played teams from other Power Four conferences. You know, the SEC chooses not to do that. They want to play themselves, and then they argue and moan and whatever because they're not, you know, on top of the hill anymore.
Craig says, SEC people need to decide if it just means more or if they want to hide behind the fact their playoff record has been pathetic the last 3 to 4 years. You can't have it both ways. Notre Dame about to have the ball after this year. So clearly, Craig, a Fighting Irish fan. One texter says, win by one or win by 45. Quality wins are quality wins. What does it matter if the average margin of victory is 3 or 20? Every conference has at least one team that will get blasted by 30-plus to offset the average, a la Rutgers in Missouri.
Everybody want to bring up Rutgers.
Yeah, what's wrong with Rutgers,
guys? I don't even
think
Rutgers was – were they the worst team in the Big Ten?
I don't even know.
They weren't very good last year.
I know they were not good, but they couldn't have been the worst team in the Big Ten.
It was Purdue.
So Purdue
was the worst.
So y'all need to leave Rutgers alone, okay? Y'all messing with Rutgers.
Sounds like you just don't know much football, D-Mace.
Yeah, you got a point.
One texter says, how can anyone speak to D-Mace like that? I mean
– I like it, though. He was – I mean, he had his points, and they were good, valid points. But that's not the argument that has been made for many years prior to this year, really.
I do think a tougher week-in, week-out schedule makes it harder to win 3 or 4 playoff games, which is new. You didn't used to have to do that. You could be battle-tested during the season, but as long as you didn't have terrible injuries, all you had to do was win 2 playoff games. Mm-hmm. Now, you might play in a conference championship game and then still have to win 4 playoff games. That is a long road to win. So I do think it can weaken you to play tougher teams week in and week out, which is my argument for what the SEC is, their best attribute is their toughness of from top to bottom in the league.
Caleb says Florida, Arkansas, and Mississippi State would beat Purdue, Rutgers, and Minnesota like a drum. That would quickly prove Willie's point. All right, SEC, Big Ten, we want the worst of your worst head-to-head.
Exactly, like.
Let's see who's depth.
Minnesota's solid. They're going to be all right this
Minnesota
year.
Minnesota is going to be better than people think, I think. They look
Caleb,
like
you're sleeping on Minnesota. That's right. What it sounds like.
But the bottom line is in Minnesota, they care just as much about the hockey team as they do the football team. That's how they're wired.
Well-rounded.
It just means more. Definitely is true when it comes to most of the teams in the SEC.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, yesterday, we had Blake Bedingfield on the program, former director of college scouting for the Tennessee Titans. He also writes for PaulKaharski.com. And he had a suggestion for Cam Ward and the Titans that got a lot of people fired up. We are going to continue that conversation coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.